If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
The great discovery that Henry James made about women, which made him such an interesting male writer about women, is that he realized that women are probably just like men, and that they don't think very differently, and that they don't have a completely different way of looking at the world or a completely different kind of a brain.
That was Sarah Churchwell talking about the writings of Henry James.
Listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available in print and several digital formats all over the world. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. Over the next few weeks, BBC Radio 4 is going to be exploring the work of the 19th and early 20th century Anglo-American author Henry James, whose books include such classics as The Ambassadors, The Portrait of a Lady, and Washington Square. Alongside dramatisations of several of his novels, there will be a documentary on James, co-presented by Professor Sarah Churchwell of the School of Advanced Studies. I spoke to Sarah a little while back to find out more about the life and writings of this pivotal figure in British and American cultural history. And I began by asking Sarah what first interested her in James's work.
I actually approached Henry James as a kind of challenge. He was somebody that I had heard about as a difficult writer and as a challenging writer. And I was working on my postgraduate degree in American literature and the American novel. And so I kind of had to read Henry James, but I really looked on him as a mountain that I had to climb. And so I did it, you know, in a kind of spirit of duty and in a kind of spirit of, you know, completism, I suppose, starting to make my way through his novels and realized about, you know, two novels in that this wasn't at all a difficult or a chore, and that he was absolutely brilliant, and that the reputation that he had for difficulty, which had preceded him certainly as far as I was concerned, I didn't think was merited. So I've been on a kind of Henry James, you know, evangelical train ever since.
It's interesting that you talk about this reputation you feel he has for difficulty. If you don't feel that's justified from his books, why do you think this reputation exists?
Well, look, he can be difficult to read on the level of the sentence, but that's true of some of his books and not all of them. So one of the things to bear in mind about James is that, you know, he had a very long and very prolific career. And one way to think about him as a writer is that he basically began as a Victorian novelist and he ended as a modernist. You know, James died just as James Joyce was writing Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. So modernism was emerging, and Henry James absolutely helped create literary modernism. So late James is challenging in the way that James Joyce can be challenging. It's challenging on the level of the sentence. It's not always clear what exactly is happening, to whom, when, under what circumstances. You wait sometimes a long time for a verb in the sentence. You're not really sure what it is that's actually happening. But at the beginning of James's career, he wrote in a much more straightforward manner, in a way that was recognizably similar to his contemporaries like George Eliot or even Charles Dickens. So I think that in that sense, there really is a kind of, there's something in Henry James for everyone, for people who like works that are more stylistically challenging than late James, which includes novels like The Wings of the Dove, The Golden Bowl, to a certain extent, The Ambassadors. Those are perhaps a little bit more difficult. But even so, I think all of that difficulty is a little bit overstated. We now live in a world, I think, where books are so explicit. They're explicit in the sense that, you know, we use so-called explicit language. We're much clearer about what's going on in every sense, sexually, in terms of the language that we're willing to use, you know, vulgarity or obscenity, and explicit in terms of the clarity with which we tend to tell our stories. But and those stories tend to be very full of action and incident. They're, of course, influenced by the movies. But James lived in a pre-cinematic world, and his sense of what could be interesting is very much about the implicit and the subtle and the nuanced. So he is as difficult as somebody trying to do something complex is likely to be. He's not a simple writer with a simple view of the world or a simple story. But as I say, even so, in his earlier books, he is pretty simple and straightforward. Daisy Miller, Washington Square, you know, Roderick Hudson. These are very, very straightforward books to read.
Coming on to Henry James, the man himself, what kind of a start to life and upbringing did he have?
Well, Henry James had a very eccentric and unusual upbringing, certainly for the time, but even for now. He was the grandson of a wealthy Irish immigrant. So his father was really part of the leisure class. He didn't have to work for a living. They had rents on which they lived, you know, from properties that they'd inherited. And James Sr., Henry James's father, who's confusingly also called Henry James, was a very, very eccentric man. He was a sort of crank, for want of a better word. He was a kind of crank philosopher. And before James was very old, Henry James had taken his small family, which consisted of Henry James, his sister Alice, who would later become famous for her diaries, and his older brother William James, who was the father of American psychology, the great pragmatic philosopher and psychologist. And he'd taken his three children and his wife on a tour of Europe, which became a kind of never-ending tour. So James was raised in this very peripatetic upbringing across the continent of Europe. They lived mostly in hotels, and they would occasionally go back to New York. People sometimes think of Henry James as a New England writer, but he was raised in New York, and he always saw himself very much as a New Yorker, and of course as an American abroad. And so Europe was really part of his childhood, part of his consciousness. He was fluent in several languages. His French was beautiful. And that's why, as an adult, he came back to Europe, because in many ways, Europe really was his home.
And how much did this upbringing, this unusual upbringing, then influence the work he was to produce?
Oh, well, I think it absolutely influenced. It influenced him on every level. It made him an American abroad. And that, as I can attest after almost 20 years here in Britain, is a very specific thing. It means you're neither American nor European, but you are an American who lives in Europe, and you have this kind of dual viewpoint. And that's very much who James became, and that very much became his subject. Matter. We talk about the idea of the American innocent abroad as a theme in a lot of fiction, both American and European fiction, but particularly in American fiction. And people say, oh, you know, Henry James, he was always interested in the encounter between Americans and Europeans. But it's important to remember that he really kind of pioneered that. That wasn't really seen as a perennial subject matter, as a perennial theme for storytelling in the way that it is now. He really carved that out and made it his own.
He was very much a transatlantic figure at this time. And how different would British and American social attitudes have been at the times that he was writing?
Well, again, he lived a long life, and his work spanned many decades. So the relationship between America and Europe was in flux, and he was sort of riding the leading edge of that wave. So at the beginning of his career, America was very much seen as a backwater. When James came into adulthood at the time of the American Civil War, which is in the 1860s. And so, you know, I mean, Chicago wasn't yet a city, right? I mean, the West was still not settled. When you think about the prototypical Western of, you know, cowboys and Indians in you know, California, those stories take place in the 1870s and 1880s. As James was coming to Europe, America was still being settled. He was born in the 1840s in a New York that would be unrecognizable to us today. America was seen by Europe, but saw itself as a cultural backwater that had not produced any great artists, that did not have any real kind of, even yet commercial power, although its commercial power was growing. By the time James died, he died during the First World War. By the time he died, America was on the cusp of the American century, and that power had really shifted westward over the last 50 years. And that was the world that James was chronicling.
And so do you see through the course of his books how these relationships between Britain and America was changing?
Absolutely. You know, by the end of his novels, a story like The Golden Bowl is very much the kind of plot of Downton Abbey, right? It's the story of the American heiress whose money is being brought to European aristocracy to keep, you know, the landed gentry afloat. You know, that sort of Consuela Vanderbilt story is very much what James was seeing around him. And it was a story that he wrote more than once, but at the beginning of his career, he was much more interested in the idea of the innocent American abroad, of this kind of American who didn't even know what to expect in Europe. Well, whereas by the time he died, by the time of the First World War, all kinds of changes in the ways that stories were told in the magazine culture, in the coming of film, meant that Americans, even quote unquote ordinary Americans, small town Americans, had a much better idea of what Europe was like. And they partly had those ideas through reading the stories of Henry James, books like Daisy Miller, which was his first great success, which is a story about an American girl in Rome. And so Americans were forming their ideas of what Europe would be like, partly through novels like James's.
I mean, that was actually something I was going to come on to. So how much impact did Henry James's works actually at the time have on the people who read them?
Well, it's hard to say how much impact he had on, you know, on an individual reader, but culturally, his impact was very great indeed. He was a bestseller as a young man, as I say, with Daisy Miller, with Washington Square. Some of his early and more accessible, still more accessible works, made him a very, very well-known figure. And he proceeded to write more and more challenging books. And as is so often the case, when artists try to do things that are more challenging, they can sometimes leave their audiences behind. And that's certainly what happened with James. So his work, as it got more difficult and more ambitious, it also got less popular. It was speaking less to mass tastes, and it was becoming more niche. But he remained very, very influential. So he was somebody that other writers were very conscious of. He was somebody that set a kind of literary agenda. He was somebody that you had to take into account. He wasn't a negligible figure. So for the next generation of writers, someone like Edith Wharton, for example, who was not really next generation, but was younger than James and became a friend of his, you can see instantly how influenced she was by his novels. But then the next generation would really be writers like Scott Fitzgerald and Ernest Hemingway. And although they were not as obviously influenced by James in terms of their style or their subject matter, although of course they both also went abroad and wrote as Americans abroad, they had to wrestle with his influence. They had to take him into account. He comes into their correspondence. He comes into their essays. They're thinking about Henry James and what he meant for American letters.
You mentioned Edith Wharton, but which other writers did he actually interact with on a personal level at this time?
James was a very, very sociable figure, and he knew all of the writers and artists of his day. He was very close friends, for instance, with George Du Maurier, who became a best-selling author when he wrote Trilby, the famous story about Svengali, and was, of course, the grandfather of Daphne Du Maurier. And everybody from kind of George Du Maurier through, he was friends with many French writers. He was friends with Turgenev. He was friends with Edmund Goss. He was notably not friends with Oscar Wilde, although they knew a lot of the same people, but he didn't care much for Wilde. But he was friends with Henry Adams, whose great Education of Henry Adams is one of the most important American autobiographies. So many of these names are not household names anymore, but they were during James's lifetime. And he was also friends with artists. He was good friends with John Singer Sargent, for example. He knew Whistler. He traveled in very, very artistic and cultured circles.
What kind of a man was Henry James in his later life?
Well, in his later life, he struggled a bit with depression. He lost his family. He lost his beloved brother, his sister, his parents in a fairly short span of time. And then the coming of the First World War meant that he was wrestling with depression and illness toward the end. But he isn't a man that you can summarize quickly. He was a very complex. He was a genius, and geniuses can't, I don't think, really be encapsulated. He had a tremendous sense of humor. He had a great kind of mischievous, wicked, gossipy side. He had a great kind of serious side. He was incredibly ambitious for his art. As I say, he was, on the one hand, very social, but he was clearly a gay man, what we would now call a gay man. He was closeted. He chose to remain a bachelor. He never married. So he was, in many ways, a lonely man as well, for all of his sociability, and he was somebody who needed to restrict his sociability in order to focus on his art, and that could sometimes lead to loneliness and depression. So he was a very complex figure. He's not somebody that you can kind of, you know, do a quick thumbnail portrait of.
And his portraits of women are very interesting within his books. Could you please tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his portraits of women, because Henry James made this really remarkable discovery, in my view, when he began writing about women. He wrote about Daisy Miller in the novel of that name. He wrote about Catherine Sloper in his early novel, Washington Square. And it's as if those two prepared him for his first great female character, Isabel Archer, in The Portrait of a Lady, which was published in 1881. And the great discovery that Henry James made about women, which made him such an interesting male writer about women, is that he realized that women are probably just like men, and that they don't think very differently, and that they don't have a completely different way of looking at the world or a completely different kind of a brain. He just assumed that women probably would think much like he did, and that they would react as he would react to circumscribed circumstances. Sorry, that's not a very good turn of phrase. But he recognized that that women in his era lived under real social restrictions. There were all kinds of things that women in the Victorian era couldn't do or were coerced into not doing, shamed into not doing. And he was very alert to that kind of social coercion and the restrictions that it placed on women. And so he, I think, simply imagined how he would feel in similar circumstances. And so he writes these women who are full, autonomous, integral human beings. They are intelligent. They think about the world. They don't just think about getting a husband or a new pair of shoes. They're engaged in politics. They're engaged in ideas. They're engaged in their own thoughts about the world and their own experiences. And he could imagine women who were just as fully human as any man. And I, you know, obviously I was being facetious when I said that that was a great discovery, because it shouldn't have been. And yet he remains one of the few male writers to ever work that out.
At the time, was there any kind of backlash to the way he presented women? Because it was quite different from social norms at the time.
Well, yes and no, because he didn't do the thing that, for example, Flaubert did with Madame Bovary. He tended not to condone adultery, for example. So his books, although in his books adultery happens, he tends to, particularly in the early books, it tends to, if not be punished, it tends to be something that the novel makes clear is problematic in some way. So he wasn't really, kind of pushing the social envelope in that regard, at least not early on. But by the end, he was. I mean, with a book like The Ambassadors, which is one of his late novels, which he began in 1900, his publisher did think that it was a bit too risque, and it does have an adultery at the center of the story. And part of the problem that the publisher had with that story was precisely that nobody seemed to suggest that it was going to ruin people's lives to have this affair, and that, in fact, a lot of the characters in the novel come down on the side that the affair was very good for everybody involved. And that was a bit rich for James's publishers. They thought that was a bit racy, and it was one thing to have an adulterous couple. It was another thing to suggest it was good for them.
Coming back to the transatlantic idea, Anglo-American relationships are very much under the spotlight nowadays. How do you think a figure like Henry James would have felt about the current situation?
Well, yeah, I think that the situation in American political life would have been so unimaginable to somebody like James. That I think, this was a man of tremendous imagination, and he understood that American cultural life tended in certain kinds of directions. As I said at the beginning, he was very much coming out of an idea of America as a kind of cultural backwater. So in one sense, he knew Melville's work, and Melville, if he doesn't quite predict a Trump character, but in his novel The Confidence Man, or in Mark Twain in the Duke and Dauphin characters in The Huckleberry Finn, there's a kind of old tradition in America of the trickster, con man, huckster figure. So it's not that Trump would have been an unimaginable figure to James, but I certainly think that he would not have been able to envision the degradation and debasement of American political discourse and civil discourse to the degree that we have found ourselves in. I think he would only have just been absolutely horrified.
And just one last question. Do you have a favorite Henry James book and why?
Yeah, my favorite James book, although The Portrait of a Lady is very, very high up there, but my favorite book of his overall is The Ambassadors. And it's my favorite because I think it's utterly hilarious. And it has at its center one of my favorite characters in all of fiction, who is this absolutely wonderful, wrong-headed, but well-meaning man called Lambert Strether. And he's absolutely one of my favorite people in the world, even though he doesn't exist in the world.
We don't always realise just how much our negative thoughts and experiences stick with us and weigh us down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mum does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger. Talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/historyextra today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/historyextra.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That was Professor Sarah Churchwell. The documentary entitled Love Henry James, The Master, is due to air this Thursday, the 27th of July, at 11:30 a.m. on BBC Radio 4. And do check your listings information for details of the Henry James dramas on the same station. Now, just before we go, here's a reminder that tickets are currently on sale for our History Weekend events, taking place on the 6th to 8th of October in Winchester, and then the 24th to 26th of November in York. We have a fantastic array of speakers, including Alison Weir, Dan Jones, Charles Spencer, and Janina Ramirez. Head to historyweekend.com for more information and to purchase tickets. And that is all for today's episode, but we will be back on Thursday with more from the world of history.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Jack Fletcher. Do let us know what you think about this episode by emailing podcast@historyextra.com, and we might read out your messages in future editions. Alternatively, why not keep in touch via Twitter or Facebook, where you'll find us at History Extra. For more great history content, don't forget to visit our website, historyextra.com, which is full of history articles, quizzes, image galleries, and more. Plus, it's where you can download hundreds of previous episodes of this podcast.